Welcome to Neither the Time Nor the Space, a podcast about Doctor Who. My name is David, and as always, I am joined by the non-canonical Matt.
Hello there.
So, Matt, today we are discussing Doctor Who and the Daleks.
Yeah, I feel like it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, it certainly has. Not least because this is our third attempt at recording this intro.
Yeah. let's not point fingers of blame, okay? It's our third time.
Absolutely. I'll leave it up to you, listeners, as to who has been sat here patiently reading Roy Castle's Wikipedia article and who has been farting about with their phone and their laptop for the last 20 minutes.
Never mind.
So, I'm very excited about this one, Matt. Don't mind telling you.
Something a bit different.
Something that's very near and dear to my heart. For reasons that we'll get into in a little while. But before we get bogged down in all of that nitty-gritty, tell me, Matt, how have you been since we last spoke?
I can't even remember when we last recorded and what I've done since. But life is good. Yeah.
Still enjoying Romania.
Yeah, of course. Trying to think if I've actually done anything. There's a big bit that's going to tie in with this week's movie review.
Great.
I went to the pub and watched the rugby last weekend. Oh, I'll tell you what the main problem in Romania is. Nobody has feet larger than UK size 10. So as a man who wears size 13 shoes, I had an absolute nightmare last weekend.
Oh, well, that does sound challenging. I mean, to be honest, not for me personally, but for you, certainly.
In fact, the only shoes that they had in my size were some sort of limited edition Nike trainers that would have cost more than a month's wage.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a good idea.
Plus, I wanted formal shoes for work, so it wouldn't have worked out in the long run.
No, not really. So then,
But yeah, that was it. I bought some plants for my balcony, planted some sunflowers. And
very exciting.
It's been a fairly dull affair since we last spoke.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, it has been for me as well, to be honest. It's you know, as usual at the moment, my life has largely been taken up with work and parenting duties and not a great deal else, unfortunately. Though I do have something exciting planned for this weekend, which will be nice.
Yeah.
Which I will tell you about in like 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, me too. I'm actually running a pub quiz this weekend for my colleagues.
Oh, yes. You road tested some questions with me, didn't you?
Yeah, let me tell you, being kind is a real ball ache, David. That quiz has dominated my life. I've rewritten the music around three or four times.
You should have let me write the music round. No points for anyone.
Yeah. Low scoring affair. Let's go home.
But you know, somebody might have discovered Captain Beefheart for the first time. That would have been nice for them.
Yeah. I mean, in our own way, aren't we all in the court of the Crimson King in one way or another?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. But that leads into my film review this week, David.
Go for it.
Movie review. Movie review. Because since last time, I have watched precisely three movies.
Oh.
Would you like movie one, two, or three?
Two, please, Matt.
Movie two is Doctor Who and the Daleks.
Hooray! Hooray! Should we table that one?
Should we just go straight into it?
I mean, we can do. Well, I'll do all the other segments at the end. Yeah. No, I'll be honest. I would find that too jarring. No, we need to stick to tradition.
Let me tell you about one then. Movie one. Okay, now I've spoiled this surprise because I text you about this in the week.
You did, yes.
I went to watch Dune Part 2. Yeah. And I was incredibly excited.
Yeah.
Okay, so I enjoyed the first one and I'd heard the second one was a lot better. But yeah, I was really, really, really excited. And when I decided to go, I went to the IMAX. So there's a cinema about 5 minute walk from my house. But right. I decided I would go to the Bucharest IMAX, which is the other side of the city. So it was a bit of a journey to get there. And when I sat down, I was like, this is it, guys. This is it. Approximately 30% of that film, David, is spoken in an alien language. I think it's called Faerun or something. Uh-huh. And when you watch films like that in Romania, the subtitles are in Romanian. Large portions of that film, David, I didn't have a Scooby-Doo what was going on.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, you know, I mean, how are you feeling about it? Are you going to try again, find a different screening that might have English subtitles, or are you just going to wait until it's out?
There aren't any, but right. I'll just watch it on a perfectly legal streaming service when it becomes available. The thing is, I was able to get the gist of what was going on. When he was giving a big impassioned speech, it doesn't really matter what words he says, it's just that's the big impassioned speech, isn't it?
Yeah.
When he's saying how happy he is, you can just tell how happy it is. You know?
Yeah, they could have just done the whole film without any dialogue, really, couldn't they?
Yeah, just like emojis.
Save the actors. Yeah. Why bother making anything matter, eh?
But I do have big news when it comes to Dune 2.
What's that?
Well, despite not understanding a large portion of it, it is the first film I've seen this year which I'm awarding a 10 out of 10 score.
Ooh, wow. Wowzers. I really need to knuckle down and actually watch the first one, don't I? So I can get caught up before it disappears from cinemas.
Yeah, the first one is good. I think I gave it 7 out of 10. But this new one, David, is something special.
Yeah. I mean, well, kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Because at the end of the day, the first one is adapting the first half of a book. Oh. So you'd hope that the second part is better because that's where it's kind of paying off the stuff it was setting up in the first part.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot. I don't know. There's just a lot. It's nearly 3 hours long.
Yeah, crikey.
Yeah.
That's the thing that makes me slightly wary with Dune. It's that I don't know that I've got the stamina for it these days.
Just break it up over a couple of nights. Watch it on streaming.
Yeah.
When it finished...
That's what I need to do.
I think I did the biggest piss I've done in my adult life. Like, legitimately, I think it could have been over a pint.
Wowzers.
I had a big coffee before I went in, and then... Because it was the IMAX, it was really packed, and it's steep, and I didn't want to get up and stand in anyone's way to go for a wee. So, just held it in. And it was really
congratulations.
Hot. And I didn't understand the film. So, 10 out of 10 all round.
Brilliant.
Yeah. The only other film I watched this week is Ricky Stenicki.
Great. What on earth is Ricky Stenicki?
It's a film basically where some young boys get into trouble. So they blame it. They invent somebody called Ricky Stenicki and say it was his fault. And then they use him all through their lives as an excuse. But then one of them is having a baby, and his wife's like, oh, I want your friend Ricky to come meet us. So they pay an actor to play it. It's pretty funny. 7 out of 10. Possibly 6 cool. out of 10, if I have some more time to think about it.
So is that a recent-ish
yeah.
film then?
Yeah, I think it's currently in cinemas. I watched it on, I think, Disney Plus or Netflix or one of the legal streaming sites.
Yes, yeah, one of those ones.
Yeah. Right, don't know then. If I've got yeah. anything else to talk about. I've had a fairly mundane, boring week.
Yeah, well, mine, as I say, has been distinctly unremarkable. I mean, last weekend, Saturday, I went and saw some children's theatre with my son.
Okay.
So, you know, I can give you a review of that if you like. But,
was he performing?
Good. No, he was demonstrating his breakdancing moves to the performers after the performance was finished. So
good.
You know.
I like that.
A bit. But, yeah, no, it was good. It was, you know, a sort of gently humorous, mostly physical bit of theatre. The set mostly comprised of cardboard boxes and, you know, and it was all about, like, you know, neurodiversity and stuff like that.
Good, good.
And how people are wired differently, but that doesn't mean we can't get along and be respectful of each other. All terribly wholesome. But yes, we did that. And on Sunday, met up with my mum at the garden centre.
How is your mum?
She's all right, yeah. She's doing well.
Good. And how's the garden centre?
It's got plants in it.
Yeah.
They do a nice toasty there.
They don't really do garden centres over here.
No, I think it might be specifically a British thing. You know, I mean, obviously you can buy plants in other countries, but the idea of a big sprawling complex that's mostly dedicated to garden stuff, but will also do you some books, some jumpers. And have a giant cafe.
Yeah.
That seems like a very British thing to me.
Like, my favourite was, back when I lived in the UK, my local, you could buy a sausage sandwich, some Lego, some shotgun cartridges, and a pair of wellies.
All at the same shop.
Just the dream.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it one? So, are you finding yourself remotely nostalgic for the UK, or are you just done with it?
No. Yesterday, I was talking to my two brothers, and I was kind of fishing for an invite. One of my brothers lives in Australia, and he was complaining about doing the gardening. And I was saying, you know, over the summer, maybe I'll come across, do it for you, fishing for an invite. And then my other brother, who lives in the UK, said, well, why don't you come do mine? I was like, you can get stuffed, pal. All right? No, like I say, not really. It's fairly nice here. I'm having a good time.
Yeah. I mean, you know? I don't blame you. Britain has not got a lot to offer anyone right now.
Yeah, plus, what's going on with Kate Middleton at the moment? Is she secretly dead? Is this a cover-up?
Well, these are the questions that are being asked.
According to the Spanish media, she was in a coma and almost died, and the British press are covering it up. We're getting all the conspiracies over here in Romania.
I mean, to be honest, if that came out in the fullness of time, it wouldn't shock me. The whole thing is just like, I mean, but also equally, it wouldn't shock me if it literally just is a case of they are shit at PR. And they just vacillated for far too long to put anything out. And when they did put it out, it was shit. And it just cast more suspicion over the whole affair. that is also a very, very believable sequence of events to me. So I don't know. I'm you know, as a staunch Republican
Royalist.
In the true sense of the word, yes, I am very much enjoying just any situation in which the royal family seems to just be shooting itself in its
own. That's effort. It. I'm just admiring, because obviously we've got video on the call. Does your T-shirt say, "I am Oliver Cromwell"? is that what it says?
You know, I really genuinely resent Oliver Cromwell for giving Republicans a bad name. Because he had a real crack at it, but he just... Yeah. Why did he have to be such a Puritan and, you know, murder all those Irish...
I think the best thing the best thing to come out of all that was the horrible history song about Charles II, the king who brought back partying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that it's true for a lot of... awful historical periods, that at least we got a funny song from Horrible Histories out of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's always a silver lining, isn't there?
Yeah. Are we padding this week? We've done quarter of an hour and haven't really said anything.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't just want to dive... At the end of the day, we're going to be diving into a review of a film that is a pretty faithful retelling of a story that I think we covered last year or the year before on the podcast.
Yeah, I pretty much knew this movie beat for beat, having never seen it before.
Yeah, which I'm sure was a surreal thing for you. But it was important to me that you watched the original first.
Yeah.
Unlike me.
If we'd have started with this, if you'd have said, "Matt, we're doing Doctor Who," it's almost 5 years ago. Yeah. Can we watch Doctor Who and the Daleks? If you told me this is what we would be watching for the next 5 years,
yeah,
I don't think we'd be friends anymore. Like, I liked it. Don't get me wrong. I had a good time with it. But I didn't want to start with it. As how we've dealt with it, as like a little curio, that's fine. But, yeah, I don't know. It's an odd egg, isn't it?
It certainly is. Are we diving into this now then, Matt? Are we just going for it?
Yeah, but I want you to begin by waxing lyrical about why you love this film.
Okay, well, I mean, as you said there, it would be a weird place to start. But it is where I started with Doctor Who.
Oh, really?
I know I said previously on the podcast, I wasn't sure whether it was this or whether it was Spearhead from Space was the first thing that I saw. In fact, no, not even Spearhead from Space. I think it would have been Terror of the Autons. Yeah. But anyway, I've done some research, and I think the way the broadcast dates line up, I think it must have been Doctor Who and the Daleks, because in my memory, I was only 5 or 6 first time I saw this. Okay. And I taped it off the telly, because I was aware of Doctor Who. I knew it was a thing that, like, just the basic concept of it, you know, mad professor type, with a magic box, goes to alien planets. I was just like, yeah, brilliant, sign me up. I need this in my life. So I taped it off the telly. A couple of years later, they did the second one, Daleks Invasion of Earth. So I got that taped as well. But this first one, you know, it lived with me for the longest. I must have watched it at least a dozen times over those couple of years. And it was so precious to me because it was the only Doctor Who I had at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, looking at it with hindsight, it's a terrible approximation of Doctor Who. But it's so special to me because it was, for a long time, all I had. And I do think... I don't know whether to say this now or leave this a bit, but I'll mention it now. I think part of it for me, part of the reason I stuck with it and returned to it, though I am not a big fan, actually, with hindsight, of Peter Cushing's interpretation, I don't think it's his fault necessarily, but the Doctor we end up with, I think, is a little bland.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little undercooked compared to the TV Doctors. But in his look and his mannerisms, he was so much like my own granddad.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, I had one of my grandfathers growing up was a slightly lanky, mustachioed, white-haired, very kind, very quiet tinkerer who was, you know, he was always doing like woodwork in his shed and stuff like that. And there is so much overlap in my head between Peter Cushing's Doctor and my granddad that it just, yeah, it kind of resonated with me on that level. So yeah, this is one of those things where, you know, objectively something is at best a 6 out of 10 affair, but to you it is precious and it is priceless and you cannot be remotely objective about it. And this is one of those things for me. I think it's fair to say.
Cool. Can I ask one question?
Of course, fire away.
Why the hell was this made? Right.
Money.
It's in colour. Is that always the answer? So we're like at least three Doctors in at this point.
Nope.
Oh, no, it's 1965,
So it's only coming... Because, of course, colour film projection
was before colour TV.
Came about well before colour TV. So a big part of the appeal, I mean, you look at the poster, which was out for it, and it's in massive letters at the top, you know, something along the lines of, now on the big screen in colour. So that was a huge part of the selling point. And the other thing to note, which I think really gives it away, in the lettering, Doctor Who and the, very small lettering, Daleks, absolutely massive. Poster is just like a production line of Daleks. There is no Doctor, there is no TARDIS. Now, if someone made a canonical or otherwise Doctor Who film, you would have Doctor Who in massive letters. You would have the TARDIS front and centre. Because that is part of the iconic brand. But at this early stage, it was the Daleks that people went wild for. And it was that, it was the so-called Dalek mania that the production company were kind of piggybacking off.
Right, okay.
I was reading that they paid Terry Nation and the BBC the princely sum of £500 for an option to do this story and two sequels. Of course, only one of them ever got made, but... and it made bank. It wasn't like a super international smash or anything, but in the UK it was, you know, it did decent box office.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd have gone to see it.
No, I think it pretty much exclusively was an excuse to get the kids out of the house for an afternoon. You know, that's the only... It was probably cinemas of largely just unruly kids. with barely responsible adult insight.
I think if I was a kid, I don't know how I would have watched this film, because I've made 2 points in my notes where absolutely loads of stuff has happened and we are 6 minutes into the film. And then loads of stuff is yet to happen and we have 10 minutes remaining of the film. I was just like, what is the pacing of this film? It just begins and it's like, hello, why don't you come check out my time machine? Oh no, we're in outer space. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, I mean, I do find it fascinating. It is all over the shop. Because the thing is, like, you'd think it was the easiest job in the world to take the 7 parts of the serial and just cut the fat and end up with this nice, lean, 90-minute, you know, strong through-line story, right?
Mm.
And yet, this film clocks in at just 80 minutes and they still find time for fannying about in caves.
And I estimated about 4 minutes of those 80s is at the end where they're just saying goodbye to everyone. And every single person on screen says goodbye to every other person. Honestly, it was like the Waltons. It was like, goodbye, Doctor.
Yeah.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Susan. Goodbye. Goodbye, Barbara. Goodbye. Goodbye, Ian.
And let's
goodbye. And then it moves on to the next person who says goodbye 4 times.
The other thing I wanted to mention in terms of like runtime is, I mean, a good 15 minute of it has got to be taken up with Daleks very laboriously expositioning at one another.
Mm.
It, you know, which is, I mean, that's a struggle at the best of times with Doctor Who, with Dalek stories. You're always going to get a bit of that, but there is the pace of the Dalek only scenes in this are absolutely leaden.
But for all that heavy exposition, when it comes to the Doctor, when Ian says, oh, where did you get this TARDIS? He goes, oh, no, made it. Just like because they've written out the fact he's an alien, they just go, oh, where did you find that? He just went, I'm an inventor, aren't I? I made it. Like, there's two or three times where there's some sort of big science, technological bit, and it just ends with the Doctor just going, yeah, I made that.
So, shall we just get stuck into this?
Yeah, thing? I'm just trying to think if I have any more last-minute questions. Let's start with a question about the opening.
Yeah.
Why is the Doctor an inventor? Why is Barbara related to him? And why is he and Barbara's boyfriend now? Is it just plot convenience?
I think it's plot convenience. It cuts out a bit of the faff. I mean, if they'd wanted to introduce them the way they are in An Unearthly Child, then you've got to tack on like 20 minutes of Susan at school and the teacher stalking her. All of that. It's a lot of extra hassle. So in some ways, I do admire the briskness of just being like, right, Susan and Barbara are already there in the house. They're related to the Doctor, so they know what they know what's up. And then we'll just throw hapless Ian into proceedings, and we'll talk more about Roy Castle's Ian in a moment, I think. In terms of dramatic license, I think that's fine. I think, though, you do lose so much by making the Doctor just a human inventor.
Mm.
Like, yes, yes, he is a Mad Professor character, but there is so much more to the Doctor than just Mad Professor.
Also, where did he make this TARDIS? Because his house is immaculate.
And it's just in the garden, by the looks of things.
He just knocked it together in the garden.
Well, I'm presuming he worked on what, you know, whatever makes it dimensionally transcendental first. So he started with the police box. First thing he did was install the make the inside massive machine. Mm-hmm. and then he's just got oodles of space to work on the rest, right?
Yeah. Also, we'll get to it when we reach that point. But for somebody who's meant to be super, super intelligent, I'm going to point out just how quite stupid this incarnation of the Doctor is. But never mind. Right.
Yeah, we'll get there.
This is, then, Doctor Who and the Daleks. From the 23rd of August, 1965.
Yeah.
The screenplay is written by Milton Subotsky, obviously adapted from Terry Nation. Mm-hmm. And directed by Gordon Fleming. I had a quick look. Gordon Fleming hadn't really directed much else.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. It says he did 6 theatrical films, several television films, and also some... he's done a lot of TV, by the looks of things. Oh, he did The Saint... The Avengers, The Bill, Emmerdale, Taggart.
Yeah, his son's an actor, I saw when I went down the Wikipedia wormhole.
Yeah. So I think he probably had a decent enough career, all things considered, Gordon Fleming. Mm. I think Milton Subotsky had less going on. Actually, even then, he kept himself busy doing, I think, mostly sort of like B movie stuff. Mm-hmm. Oh, he did a mini series based on the Martian Chronicles, apparently.
So, would it be fair to say this was the peak of both those men's careers?
I think, as is inevitable, with an awful lot of British creatives, when they come into contact with Doctor Who, that inevitably runs the risk of eclipsing all their other achievements just because it is Doctor Who, and it will be analysed to a far greater degree than anything else they do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are some that manage to transcend it. Like, I think Peter Capaldi, you know, was already a very well-established, successful actor before he took on the role. But even so, like, his obituary, it's going to mention Doctor Who front and centre when that time comes. I think it's just the nature of the thing, isn't it? It's such an institution. So whether or not they would personally point to it as their career highlights is another matter. Because it was something that was knocked together fairly quickly as a bit of a cash grab. So I don't think they were under any illusions of that. But, you know, there's, you know what? I think they've did some good work. I think Milton Subotsky's makes a reasonable stab at condensing the core story without losing much of the important elements of it. And I think Gordon Fleming actually does some pretty decent direction on what was a shoestring budget.
Yeah.
I think visually it's not a bad film of its type. You know? Which I think we'll talk more about as when things pop up, but
Right. Right, so we open with Doctor Who, not the Doctor, although I'll probably refer to him as the Doctor.
Will you be incorrect to do so, because he's called Doctor Who.
Has Doctor Who ever met the Doctor?
I'm trying to think. They did about a year or so ago. They were doing some... I'm trying to think what it would have been, because it can't have been the anniversary. It was some sort of anniversary related to Doctor Who and the Daleks. And so that Doctor Who magazine had run, did a couple of issues of a comic featuring the Peter Cushing Doctor. But if memory serves, he doesn't bump into any other incarnations in that. So I don't know whether there has been any in terms of...
I googled it, but there's just canonical. Hundreds of websites saying, has the Doctor ever crossed paths with himself? It's like people have never watched the show. Anyway, you've got to watch the Five Doctors, guys.
I'm sure there would be some fan work out there that has a crack at that.
Right. Ooh,
I tell you what there is. I've not read it personally. Stephen Moffat's novelization of The Day of the Doctor includes references to this film as an in-universe film. So, like, Peter Cushing is playing the real-life Doctor as a sort of tribute. I forget exactly how it fits in, but I think that was the gist of it from what I've read about it.
So maybe this is canon.
Yeah. We should probably, if we were ever going to do another book on the podcast, it should be, I think, the Moff's novelisation of Day of the Doctor.
Oh, yeah. I'll just pop down my local branch of Carteresque and ask if they've got some Doctor Who books. In Romanian bookshops, they have exactly two books, David.
Right.
They have an English to Romanian dictionary, and then they have the Bible.
Wow. That's it.
Oh, no, sorry. Then they have loads of real weird books about tarot readings and stuff like that. Yeah, they're big into that, let me tell you.
Great.
Anyway, right. Doctor Who is at home with his two granddaughters, Susan and Barbara.
Feels just weird to say that, doesn't it?
Yeah, they're just having a little read.
They
and
are.
Then Ian arrives. And I've written
hang
in brackets.
On. We can't gloss over the what they're reading, because it's a cute little gag to start on, I think.
Well, yeah, so Susan's reading physics, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah. And Barbara's reading a science textbook as well.
Okay.
And then Doctor Who is reading now-defunct British action comic, The Eagle.
Right, okay. So,
which I think mean, is...
The thing yeah, is, that funny. Hints at a character that we never see.
Yes, it does. It does. I think that's very fair.
I'd expect that of the Doctor, but we don't get that with Doctor Who.
No, that's about one of the only glimpses you get of the slightly more madcap side of the character, really. Mm.
So yeah, Ian arrives, and when Susan opens the door, Ian falls through it. And I've put, in brackets, Roy Castle is immediately brilliant.
Yeah. So...
He's the best thing about this.
He absolutely is. I think there's no question about it. Before we go any further, do we need to talk about Roy Castle for our international listeners?
Yeah.
Because me and you, we can just quite happily rabbit on about it, knowing full well who Roy Castle is and why he's such a significant figure to us. But okay, so Roy Castle is one of your old school song and dance man type British entertainers.
Yeah.
You know,
he famously played the trumpet, didn't he?
Yeah, he was a very gifted jazz trumpeter, and also was in fact a multi-instrumentalist. Mm-hmm. He was also a very accomplished tap dancer.
Yes.
He was a singer who put out some things. And, yeah, he did comedy work, straight acting, and most famously and significantly for people of our generation, he, of course, was for a long time the presenter of children's television show Record Breakers.
Yeah, which was exactly what it says on the tin. They would just attempt to break world records, and sometimes it would be like, you know, silly things like how many milk bottles can you fit on your head or something stupid. But then it had like legitimate world record attempts, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, and Roy Castle himself. It had an excellent theme tune.
Yeah, dedication's what you need, Matt.
Yeah, if you want to be the best and you want to beat the rest, dedication.
Roy Castle himself certainly had dedication because he broke 9 world records.
Wow!
During his time on the show, including fastest tap dance with 1,440 taps per minute. Or 24 taps per
Christ.
Second. Yep. He also did the longest wing walk. Any guesses how long he was out on that plane?
3 hours.
3 hours and 23 minutes.
Wow, that's too long. You could fly to Romania from Britain in that time.
And this one in particular, Matt, I really want to see if I can find on YouTube when we're done recording. Playing the same tune on 43 different instruments in 4 minutes.
What? That sentence doesn't even make sense.
It doesn't, does it? Now, I am just reading this off Wikipedia. It does not have a citation. So I need to see if I can find any evidence to support that. But I need to know how that happened, if that did indeed really happen. But yeah. So basically what we're saying is Roy Castle, he may not be the world's greatest actor, but he's a good egg.
Yeah. And do we need to talk about his death? Weirdly, that's one of the things that he's quite famous for, isn't it?
It was huge news in the UK at the time. I think because he was open about it. He died of lung cancer, and he was open about it at a time when I think people often were less likely to talk about battling cancer.
Yeah, but you know, he himself didn't smoke, did he? But it was
he
played his trumpet in a lot of clubs, and it was secondhand smoke that it was attributed to, wasn't it?
Certainly, that was what he claimed. Because, you know, there's no way to prove that per se. But certainly, if you spend your whole life performing and particularly playing trumpet, you know, breathing in a lot of air in what would have been incredibly smoky, often quite small venues. Yeah, I think it's perfectly plausible that he could have got it as a result of passive smoking. So,
yeah, because there's a charity foundation set up in his name, isn't there? Like a lung cancer charity.
There is, like a dedicated lung cancer charity. So, he is actually a genuinely quite, certainly for our generation and older generations, you know, it's a significant figure in not just British light entertainment, but public life as well. So, yeah, and of course, I don't think I've ever told you that he is in this film. Was it a surprise to you when he showed up? No.
No,
you were
I was
aware.
Looking out for Cribbins, because I remember you saying he's in one of them.
Yeah, no, he's in the second one. So you've got young Cribbins to look forward to still. Mm. I mean, I don't think it's a spoiler to say he's very much sort of stepping into Roy Castle's shoes. It is the same sort of like comic relief, younger man role,
right?
That Cribbins plays in that film. But anyway, yeah. So they've taken Ian and they've made him silly, haven't they, Matt? Ian's silly now.
But it, It works. It works.
That's the thing. I think it does. I think it wouldn't have worked on screen. Could you imagine three seasons of televised Doctor Who with Ian behaving like that? It would be interminable.
But, yeah, it works here.
But yeah, absolutely. There's one scene in particular that I think it certainly was a highlight for me as a kid, and I think holds up, which we'll get to. But yeah, so Ian's bumbling around. He's sitting on boxes of chocolates.
Yeah, that's meant for Barbara. Yeah. And this is where we find out the Doctor's an inventor. And immediately he shows Ian TARDIS. Not the TARDIS, just TARDIS.
No. Yeah, no definite article. That, I'll be honest, Matt, that is jarring every time, isn't it?
Yeah. And when he shows him it, instead of saying it's bigger on the inside, he goes, oh, it's so big in here. It's so small out there. Okay. So Barbara arrives and gives Ian a hug. And they fall into a lever. And the Doctor doesn't know where they are. They're on an alien land.
Okay, before we go any further, Matt, we need to talk about that TARDIS interior. What are your thoughts?
It's too manic for me. I like a minimalist spacious TARDIS. Like this, it looked like a GCSE workshop. Like just wires everywhere.
It's very cluttered.
No central console. Cluttered.
No, that's a really interesting feature. Two other things I would point out, though. I really actually like the big red lever that Ian bumps into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a sort of like the handbrake you get on a steam traction engine or something.
Yes. Yeah.
So I like that. I also really like the widescreen scanner.
Yeah.
I feel like that's almost like a little nod to the haha, we're on film now. We're in widescreen.
A step up.
So that's fun. And the other thing that I particularly wanted to note is the TARDIS doors. Now I've tried to fact check this, but I was hastily looking at clips and screenshots and things. I am pretty certain that it's not until New Who in 2005 that we get TARDIS doors that look like the outside of the TARDIS on the inside, except for in this.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Like, in all of classic Who, on the exterior of the TARDIS, it looks like a police box. But then the interior doors are these great big plastic chunky things that in no way correlate to what you see on the outside. And I was trying, the thing I was trying to check was whether, I couldn't remember off the top of my head what the doors are like in the Paul McGann movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I could only find quite a low-res clip, but there they looked more like sort of, they were in keeping with the sort of gothic interior of that TARDIS. They didn't look like generic police box doors.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, anyway, sorry, I got very... I went down a bit of a rabbit hole with that one, but I was just thinking about it as I was watching, just like, hang on. That's good. And the other thing I really like about it is, when they first enter that TARDIS, he opens the doors and the lights come on. And you get that really bright light shining in the sort of darkness of the garden coming through the windows. And I thought, that's a really cool, like, visual moment there. And there were quite a few moments like that where I was, throughout this film, just like, oh, that... You can see how, in a lot of ways, this is an upgrade, you know? That filmmaker's eye, now that we're not having to kind of basically shoot it like a stage play on a cramped little studio. We've got room to breathe, room to explore. We're doing like longer panning shots. We're doing interesting angles from above and below. And, you know, there's a lot more visual vocabulary in this film.
Plus, the Doctor doesn't call Ian Chesterton like Iachenka John, and it stays in. Like, there's edits.
Oh, yes, they've definitely edited it to you know, like, choose the best takes.
Mm. Right.
Because there was presumably more than one in some cases.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a big forest fire. Ian asks to go home, but Susan and Doctor Who want to go explore. They find a flower and Barbara screams. There's a monster which is petrified, so Ian smashes it. And whilst all this is going on, Susan has spotted a city. Barbara tells Ian it's not dangerous, but Ian just wants to go home. Susan is attacked by something human-like, so they all go back to TARDIS.
Yes.
There's a knock, but they decide they're going to go home, but it doesn't work. The fluid link hasn't got its mercury.
Oh, dear.
No.
Come on now, Doctor.
Yeah. So, they decide they're going to go to the city. Outside, Susan finds vials of some sort of drug. They continue to head to the city. They begin to feel unwell, so they split up
Sorry, I was just going to say, first of all, I do like the petrified forest set. You know, they use it extensively in this. It's obviously a set, but it is nice, I think. Yeah, it's well realised.
Excuse me. In black and white, it's hard to tell that it was even petrified. Here, it looks pretty good.
Yes, yeah. They've used some, like, interesting... They use, like, coloured lights on it and stuff, so give it a sort of greenish tint and stuff. So, yeah, the end result is pretty effective, I think.
Yeah, so...
I'm less keen on the colour palette used for the Dalek City.
Well, just, like, some lovely, like, beiges and powder blues.
And... yeah, and there's a lot of... There's also a lot of, like... Not quite candy floss pink, but you know, that sort of like, what do you even call that kind of pink? It's very of its time. It's like 1960s pink.
Yeah.
Slightly dirty looking.
Yeah, grimy.
Like, okay. A grubby pink.
So, yeah. They begin to feel unwell, and whilst they're looking for the mercury, Ian has some door trouble. I thought this bit was quite good.
Yeah, that's the scene that would have me hooting as a young kid. And it was just, you know, it's just proper old school vaudeville business, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, mucking about for the laughs.
So the Doctor, Ian and Susan find a radiation detector, and I remember when we watched the original, the mercury, the hunt for this mercury was a big plot point. But here the Doctor just goes, I made that up. Just wanted to go have a look, see what was going on.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, it's also true, it is true in the original serial as well, that the Doctor is using the fluid link as an excuse. It's certainly, they make less of a deal out of it in this.
What do you think's better, the modern Dalek effect where people get shot and you can see their skeletons, or just spraying them with a bit of smoke?
I think I'd probably go modern on that. But for the time, it's quite clever, I think.
Yeah, so the Dalek's approach And Ian gets smoked. They basically spray him with a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty much what they're doing. But, like, it's cool because it's, you know, it is like an on-camera practical effect. And it's much more akin to, like, the Daleks actually doing something. Whereas in early classic Who, all they would do is, like, just invert the image. So it's like the entire screen has just gone inverted for a couple of seconds because there was no easy way of them like depicting some sort of beam, something emanating specifically from the gun arm. So it's again, it feels like an upgrade. And also those Dalek props are just gorgeous.
Yes.
Resplendent in their reds,
I think it might
and
be my
blues
favorite.
And blacks. Yeah. And you also get a bit of variety with them, with their attachments, which is fun.
Yeah, yeah, I did like that.
Yeah.
You know, there's no plunger, it's just like a little hand, isn't it? And then they've got, like, the whisk gun is there for a bit, but...
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they some of them have got other attachments, like a sort of a claw attachment or a, you know... see one of them welding at one point and stuff. It just, yeah, it just feels a little, because we're at this very early phase still when the Daleks are popular but they're not being treated with reverence. And I think that's a trap that New Who can fall into sometimes. So people don't take risks with Daleks as much. No one's like, just, it's not like in classic Who, like, you know, think of something like Remembrance of the Daleks, where we just got the special weapons Dalek and it's this really shonky prop with a completely random different shape of Dalek and stuff like that. I kind of wish people would take punts like that still with new Dalek stories, but now it's pretty much, if they're not the bronze Daleks, as you know, seen in 2005, we're not allowed them. Nothing else will be accepted.
It would be nice to have a little bit more difference in them. Right, the Daleks discuss how they can't leave the city due to radiation, and the Doctor mentions the vials must be an anti-radiation drug. Okay. Now, they're being watched the whole time by the Daleks. So the Daleks say someone has to leave the city to get more of this drug from the Thals. So Susan volunteers, leaves the city, and is followed by a young boy, George.
Yeah, so what do you think of the Thals in this?
I can't remember what they look like in the original, but they're basically peroxide blonde wigs and blue eyeliner, aren't they?
Yes, yeah. Which, you know, don't think too hard about the sort of Aryan nature of the Thals in the context of, you know, the Daleks being sort of Nazi analogues. It gets a little confusing if you do, but. Yeah,
I was thinking,
you know,
more, what's the evolutionary basis for having blue eyelids?
Yeah, there is, very hard to say. I think it really is just a case of, look, we need to do something. This is what we have the budget for. We can get some wigs in. We can give them all matching leotards. And, that's about it.
Right, so this is... Yeah. Eridon. He's the person that left the drugs, and he gives Susan a second supply of the drugs. Yeah. When she returns to the Daleks, she gives the drugs to the Doctor and friends, and the Thals say they'll offer the drugs in exchange for food from the Daleks. But the Daleks think, we're going to use this to trap some Thals, and we'll use Susan to do it.
Yeah.
Ian works out the Daleks have been spying on them the whole time, so he and Susan disable a security camera.
Yes. Yeah, with a pen stolen from the Daleks. Why have the Daleks got a pen? Is a question. Yeah.
I don't know. That didn't strike me at the time.
Just in case, I guess.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just left over from you know, before the war or something. Yeah. We haven't talked much about Susan. Yeah.
No.
It's another big departure.
Did she have the pen because the Daleks gave her it to write a note to the Thals?
Yes.
Right.
I'm pretty certain it's a Dalek pen because it's got a big gold ball on the end.
Yeah. So, yeah, sorry. As you were saying, Susan's a good, 10 years younger in this than she was in the show?
Yes. And it's so clever that I think that is such a clever choice. Because she is so much less annoying. She does exactly the same things that Susan does in the TV serial, but because it's a sweet little 8-year-old girl doing it instead of a moody 15-year-old teenager who just needs to grow up a bit, it's... You could be so much more forgiving of it, I think. And actually, I will say also, she seems to have a bit more get up and go in her than teenager Susan does, in all honesty.
Yeah. One thing I was going to say is, you know how I said the Doctor doesn't mispronounce anything? He does call her Susie quite a lot, and I didn't know if that was intentional or not.
I'm pretty sure it is. I think it all plays into his... They really, really lean into the grandfather angle with this. Because, of course, he now has not one but two granddaughters in this version. And, you know, he's just this sweet old man who built himself a time machine in his back garden. You know, so that... Yeah, it's a definite shift. It does, like I say, I think it kind of just defangs the Doctor a bit, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's weird for me to be sat here saying one of the worst things about Doctor Who and the Daleks is Peter Cushing's Doctor Who.
But it really is.
Got so much respect for Doctor Who as for Peter Cushing as an actor, but yeah, it is. It's one of the only aspects of this where I can just point to it and say, it's a definite downgrade. As you know, Hartnell's not my favourite by any stretch, but there is the angularity, the spikiness of Hartnell's Doctor. Paired with the twinkle now and then is what makes him such an interesting, compelling and unusual lead character. And you take that difficult side of the Doctor away and you're not left with much, unfortunately.
No, there's not much Doctor in this Doctor Who, is there?
No. And I can't remember whether that improves with the second one or not. We will get to it. It probably won't be until next year, but we will at some point get around to doing Dalek's Invasion of Earth as well, I think.
Yeah. Right. So, the Thals find the note from Susan and wish to be friends with the Daleks. The Doctor deduces that the Daleks, a bit like Dodgem cars, are powered through the floor. Now, they plan to use Susan's cape to insulate the floor. They say it's probably made of some sort of plastic. And they say, oh, what can we use to blind it? Because Susan's cape will be on the floor. Three other people in that room were wearing jackets.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that.
The Doctor himself has a big smoking jacket. He could just take that off, use that.
Yeah. I mean, he'd be able to put it back on afterwards.
Yeah. It's not going to ruin it. But yeah, I couldn't get over that. He was like, what is the solution to this problem? Because we can throw her clothes, but what else could we use?
Yeah.
Literally all wearing three-piece suits.
Oh, well.
So yeah, what they do instead is wait till it brings them some food that's just sort of brown slop and throw that on it. They drag it onto the plastic cape. They pull out the Dalek and Ian climbs into the Dalek shell. And we see a little bit of the Dalek creeping out. And it doesn't look like any incarnation we've seen before.
No, no. Well, I mean, of course, at this stage, there wasn't much to establish it from. It is a similar shot to the one in the original, but in the original, what we see is a sort of a tendril that's much closer to what we eventually get with the Daleks. But yeah, it's this sort of weird webbed claw thing. It's not as effective, I don't think. And maybe that's one of the times where colour is working against it. I think the original cliffhanger shot of just the little glimpse of mutant under the cape in the black and white serial is really effective. It's proper creepy. And this just looks like a hokey B-movie special effect.
Yeah. So they walk about for a bit and the Dalek alarm goes off. The Daleks blow up Ian in his Dalek shell, except he's escaped in the elevator.
Phew.
Yeah.
Good job, Ian.
So the Thals approach the Dalek city and Doctor and company want to warn them. So a Thal gets gassed and the rest escape with the Doctor, who encourages the peaceful Thals to start going around killing loads of Daleks.
Yes. Yeah, now, it's interesting because they're giving the Doctor some of Ian's lines here from the film, from the serial. I don't know if you recall this scene in the serial,
but
it's very much Ian taking charge and telling them, come on now, lads, you need to kill some Daleks here. And I think it is just an attempt to give Doctor Who a bit more agency and a bit more influence over the narrative here. Because he hasn't done a lot up until this point.
So the Doctor and company try to use the TARDIS, but now they have no fluid link.
Yeah.
Whilst all this is going on, the Daleks just decide they've had enough and they're just going to nuke the Thals.
Yeah.
The Doctor suggests we just forfeit a Thal woman, but then Eridon fights to save her, and the Doctor's done it. He's inspired them. So they all in planning to invade the Dalek city. Ian decides now's the time he needs to have a wash, and he chooses to do so in the filthiest water he could find. But when he does, he sees some water pipes. Also, when they're looking in this pool, a Thal disappears into the shallowest water. Like, they're just like, where's he gone? It's like a puddle with bubbles.
I think the implication is that some sort of horrifying mutant has pulled him in and gobbled him up. But the budget clearly did not stretch that far.
No.
So it's all done through, you know, off-screen and implication.
So the Daleks are still planning to bomb the Thals. A Thal punches another Thal. And this was a sad moment for me. The Doctor burns the cakes.
Oh, Doctor, come on.
Right.
He's too busy thinking his clever thoughts.
Yeah. Thoughts about mirrors. He wants some. Ian and Barbara jump over a ravine. And at this point, I've written, there's 10 minutes to go. How are they going to wrap this up?
The answer is slightly disappointingly, but yeah.
Yeah. So Athal falls into the ravine, pulling Ian. And what I don't get is he cuts the rope because he's actually okay. He lands on a ledge. So yeah. He says, don't worry, cut the rope, I'll be free. But then the rope they have to pull him up is going to be load shorter. So how are they going to get him back up?
I guess it's still long enough that they manage. Now, I'm pretty sure in the serial, that guy just straight up dies, right?
I think so, yeah.
I think he just falls down the ravine and that's that. Mm. And it's, you know, serves him right for being a coward. Is the sort of subtext of that scene, if memory serves.
Right. The reason the Doctor wanted loads of mirrors was so he could trick the Thal detectors. So the Daleks approach and capture some Thals, but the Thal who fell is fine. I've talked about that. So the Daleks set off a bomb with a 100-second timer.
Mm.
Seems a long bit excessive. The Thals, I mean,
are they seconds or are they rels?
Say again, sorry.
I said, are they seconds or are they rels?
Well, I don't know, because there's a bit where I noticed when it was 40-some seconds, the Dalek goes, 44, 43, 42, 41, and, like, speeds up.
Weird. I didn't notice that, but, yeah, just shoddy editing.
Okay. So, the Doctor says, in order for peace, he'll offer the Daleks the secret of the TARDIS. But at this point, Ian, Barbara and the Thals invade. There's a bit where they push a Dalek down a hole and its stem snaps off on the ledge. And I was really sad that prop's probably destroyed now.
Probably. It's a great shot, though. I do enjoy that. As I've said before in this podcast, I love Dalek roughhousing. I love it when we just shove some Daleks around, push them in a pond, push them down a lift shaft. You know, whack them with a baseball bat. Let's not be too precious with these things.
Okay. There's a big Dalek fight and Ian shouts at the Daleks, gets them to shoot at their own machine, which stops the bomb.
Yeah.
All the Daleks are dead. The TARDIS is fixed. The Doctor spends 25 minutes saying goodbye to everyone. And they're rewarded with cloaks as symbols of their bravery, and they decide to go home. So they let Ian pull the lever to take them home, and he's so excited, he goes to open the doors to the TARDIS, and it's Roman centurions charging at them. They've only gone and picked the wrong time.
And it's very poor, grainy stock footage.
Yeah, and the perspective isn't quite right, is it?
No, it's like, I feel like they could very easily have chosen any other footage. Like, maybe, I think they were so wedded to the Romans' idea that they wouldn't let go when the footage they had didn't really work for that. Like, it could have just as easily have had, like, I don't know, footage of an alligator coming up on a bank or, you know what I mean? It could have been anything.
Yeah. But no, they'd made their mind up on that, hadn't they?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where we end. So
it is, yeah.
I didn't think it was bad. It was very different.
I think it's really interesting to, you know, as a compare and contrast thing, and as an artifact, not just of sort of Doctor Who, but also of just 60s British cinema, because it is so evocative of that type of filmmaking, which we were doing in that era, where it was a lot cheaper than Hollywood, maybe a little more experimental, even for mainstream stuff. A lot of it rooted in vaudeville and music hall and end of the pier type You know, I'm thinking of things like the Carry On films and stuff like that. So, I think it's almost more interesting to look at from that angle than it is from a Doctor Who angle. If you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things I'm glad I've seen. Like, it's better than some of the stuff we've watched. But,
oh, for sure.
But, yeah.
But is it actually good?
No, but... It's not good. It's not good Doctor Who. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
You know, if we look at it through that lens, it's not. But
no.
As a piece of like harmless fun, I can understand why as a child you were drawn to it.
Yeah, especially as a child who only had this sort of like folkloric understanding of Doctor Who. It's not like I had the actual TV show to compare it against at the time. You know, this was it for me. See,
whilst you were watching this, I was probably watching Terminator 2 and RoboCop.
Yeah, no, I would not have been allowed to watch that. And in fact, I still haven't seen either of those films that you mentioned there.
Yeah, well, one day your mum might let you.
I have seen the first Terminator.
Maybe. Is that what you were seeing your mum for at the weekend? Oh, come on, Mum, I'm a grown man. Please, can I watch RoboCop?
You're like, maybe when you're 39.
Is it like the Itchy and Scratchy movie on The Simpsons where you've been banned?
It wasn't that I was banned. It was just my parents didn't have much of an interest in those kinds of films.
Mm. Oh, neither did mine. We just put a VCR in overnight and see what we recorded.
But I don't know, it kind of rubbed off on me that I kind of for a long while just assumed that I wouldn't like that sort of thing, that because they told me that I would find it too scary and too violent and all of that I wouldn't like that. I think they were probably mistaken in hindsight. But a lot of films passed me by. I was, growing up, I was more likely to be watching, I mean, frankly, just as inappropriate, if not more so, I was watching a lot of, like, 60s British comedies and things like that.
Yeah.
You know? Stuff with just, like, casual racism in it. or just, like, really horrific attitudes towards women. But, heaven forfend an American shoots a gun. that's where the real danger lies.
Yeah.
In media. Anyway, that's all by the by. I've really enjoyed sharing this one with you, Matt. Glad we had some fun with it.
What are we doing next?
Next, I think we talked about having a bit of Third Doctor fun. Maybe
we
doing The Time Warrior.
Yeah, that's what we talked about last time.
Yeah, because it's significant. It's a couple of firsts. I'm pretty certain it's a tight four-parter, and it's a cracking little story, in my opinion.
Cool.
So, should be a fun time.
Should we go for that?
Let's do it. So, until then, listeners, thank you ever so much for listening, and until next time, cheerio.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening to Neither the Time Nor the Space.
If you wish to contact us, our email address is timenorspacepod@gmail.com and on Twitter we are @timenorspacepod.
And thank you to Alexander Urban for his smashing arrangement of the Doctor Who theme.